Hey there, it's Nikki Klosser, and I want to let you know about an awesome free giveaway for people on our email list. If you haven't already, click the link in our podcast description or go to theportraitsystem.com/signup to get on the list. If you sign up, you'll get a free Posing 101 PDF to jumpstart things. It's an epic PDF, so you'll definitely want to get this. Also, just by being in our email community, you'll get deals, sales, and information about any of our upcoming events and activities. So head over to theportraitsystem.com/signup and sign up today. You're listening to the Portrait System Podcast.
I think it really comes down to having the right attitude from the start. And, you know, clients can smell fear. If you can't say your prices to them when they're standing in front of you with confidence, they'll think you're a fraud. So, you know, I think the biggest thing with people coming into the industry is they don't believe in themselves or don't think what they're doing is something of value.
Welcome to the Portrait System Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Klosser, and this show is here to help you succeed in the world of photography and business, to help you learn to become financially free doing what you love and so much more. With over 1 million downloads, countless photographers have taken what they've learned from both our episodes and from theportraitsystem.com, and they have grown their businesses, quit their day jobs, and are designing a life of their dreams. We keep it real and share stories about the ups and downs that come with running a photography business. You'll hear real life stories of how other photographers run their business, and you'll learn actionable steps that you can take to reach your own goals. Thank you so much for being here, and let's get started. Hey guys, now is your chance to check out all of the incredible photography education we have available for you at theportraitsystem.com. For only $7, you will get access to over 1,000 videos, including pricing, posing, marketing, lighting, sales, inspiring photo shoots, self-value, and more. Yes, you'll get your first month for only $7 when you become a pro member, and you'll get access to the full download library with posing guides and workbooks and so much more. Also, this includes a pricing calculator, a studio startup timeline, our weekly live broadcasts, including Sue Bryce's live talks, access to our private, members-only Facebook groups, special discounts on photography products, and so much more. Head over to theportraitsystem.com and enter the code PODCAST7 to get your first month for only $7. That's theportraitsystem.com and enter the code PODCAST7. This week, it is such an honor to have Tony Carter on the Portrait System Podcast. Tony is a highly awarded photographer based in New Zealand, and he has been in this career for over 30 years, and Tony shares so much incredible knowledge during this entire episode. Tony has photographed tons of different genres, including weddings, families, and portraits in general, but there's something really special about his documentary work. We talked through how he creates his thought-provoking images, and we also talked about how he does not offer digitals to his clients. Instead, Tony focuses on wall art and other print products, and this has been the way of his business since he started. Okay, I am so excited for you to learn so much from the amazing Tony Carter. Let's get started. Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Thank you for being here on the Portrait System. I've been waiting to have you. This has been a long time coming.
Yeah, I've been following the podcast, and yeah, it's awesome. Just great to be here. Thank you.
Well, for people listening, if they don't know you for whatever reason, Tony is just a highly awarded photographer, particularly in Australia and New Zealand, but you're also a portrait master's judge, and you've been doing this forever, and it's awesome.
Thank you. Yes, this is my 30th year as a professional portrait photographer. First started sort of doing weddings, as the main source of income, but then just slowly moved over into portraits. Yeah, so yeah, 30 years in the game.
Yeah, so great. Now, you're in New Zealand, so tell us where in New Zealand.
I'm in the North Island of New Zealand on the west coast in a small province called Taranaki. So we have a mountain here that looks a little bit like Mount Fuji. But I'm actually just about ready to move down to the South Island and starting a new business down there with my partner in Christchurch.
Very cool. Does it have to do with photography?
Yes, it's with my partner, Catherine Williams, who's a portrait photographer like myself, but also specializes in documentary projects just like myself, really.
Very cool. We just had our kind of bonus category in the Portrait Masters Awards last round was documentary, and you got to be, the first judge to have a crack at it. And was that fun for you?
Oh, it was. It was really interesting. It's one of those things where, you know, it takes a lot of thought with documentary work. You really have to look at it very hard and see where, you know, what sort of angle the photographer's coming from. And it was just really interesting. And I'm hoping it's going to sort of take off and, you know, have its own place at Portrait Masters.
Yeah, I hope so too, because it really is a special type of photography. I feel like it's very powerful. You know, it's just, there's just something about it that really just brings a viewer in, if it's done well. I mean, it's just such a great category.
It is, and it's just such a wide range of images that can be put into something like that. I sort of think, because for me it's coming from a personal side, so doing personal projects and documenting people's lives. But you can also carry that on into your business as well and shoot in a different style. So, you know, keep changing things up and doing something a bit different.
Absolutely. Before I was a professional photographer, I traveled quite a bit. I was a school social worker and I had summers off. And I always took advantage of that and would travel just around the world to different countries. And, you know, I kind of wish that I had had a professional, you know, camera and knew what I was doing back then. I just had my point and shoot and just kind of, you know, but it would have been really cool, all those countries I traveled to, if I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, I know that feeling only too well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I might have this wrong, but I believe you were named the New Zealand Professional Photographer of the Year 6 times. Do I have that number right?
It's 7 times.
7. Okay. I've wondered if you didn't update your website or something. I'm counting. Okay, 7 times. That's incredible. Now, I assume that it didn't start as you were named right away Professional Photographer of the Year, or have you always been this good?
Well, look, because I've been around for 30 years, I probably spent the first maybe 5 or 6 years of my business career not really doing a lot of awards, that sort of thing, but just still following it. But once I started my own business, I really started to really just concentrate on the awards as something that, you know, gets your name out there, tells your clients that you mean business and that you're good at what you do, and just wanting to do things on a higher level.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about is being awarded, you know, as you are. Do you find that helped kind of grow your business on the client end? Like, yes, of course, it helps get your name out in the industry, in our industry, but, you know, overall, how have you found that it affected your client work?
When I first started entering the awards, I was doing it probably a 50-50 split of my personal work and also wedding work. So I sort of found that entering weddings really put pressure on me to perform on the day. And you just keep wanting to learn new things, put something out there that's contemporary, and just learning new styles. So I believe in, you know, once you do win awards, your clients love that as well. It's not something you need to hang your hat on, but it's definitely something that's good for personal growth. It's good for, you know, charging a lot of money with your clients. So they know that you're worth it, you know, valuing what you do.
Yeah, very cool. Now, take us back to when you first started. You know, what got you into photography in the first place?
Well, I used to race motocross, dirt track bikes when I was a young person. And I had a bit of an accident and I damaged my knee.
Ooh.
So I couldn't really race again properly after that. But what I still like going and watching. So from there, I sort of just picked up a camera and started, you know, basically shooting by feel with an old Yashica Mat camera with, you know, no light meter in it or anything, just back in the film days, and just shot, you know, from a very close viewpoint. And my interest in photography started from that. But I suppose I've always had jobs where I was dealing with people and a natural curiosity with people. So I soon find myself wanting to shoot people, and really, I wanted to do that professionally from a very early age.
It's funny when you say, okay, it's not funny that you hurt yourself. That's not funny at all. But my husband rides BMX, big dirt jumps, and he actually came to New Zealand riding there. When was that? A couple years ago. What year was that? Anyway, riding some huge dirt jumps in New Zealand. We actually just had a couple Kiwis staying with us that came over to ride his jumps here at our house. But my point in telling you this is that was what, when one of them is hurt, which someone's always hurt, that's what they do. It's they're kind of in charge of video and photos and that sort of thing. And that keeps them, it keeps them into the sport. Exactly what you said. Yeah.
Very interesting. And, you know, when you do have an interest in something, you know, that's when you get good at it, isn't it? When you can photograph something that you know and understand mm-hmm. and are passionate about, you know, that's taking it to the next level.
Yeah. It's cool that you said that, you know, you kind of always wanted to do this from a young age. I think a lot of people don't have that kind of understanding or even, you know, wherewithal that you can make this a creative, you know, passion like this into a business. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yes. I mean, I wasn't really young. I was probably about 25. So I sort of wandered through life a little bit aimlessly to start with, but just having jobs where I was just dealing with the general public. And I just quite like that people contact thing. So it sort of naturally progressed from being an amateur photographer and just always shooting something, you know, onto getting an apprenticeship mm-hmm. type thing with a photographer that had been around for 40 years, which was really, really quite an interesting way to get into, you know, the wedding and portrait market, because my old boss, Margaret Bake, who's in her 80s now, she needed to have somebody help her because she was losing her eyesight, but she still wanted to be out there in the fray photographing and doing weddings. So back then in the early 1990s, it was all film cameras and, you know, medium format film mm-hmm. cameras. So I basically started helping her out on Saturdays and being her eyes and, you know, the person who did everything really, and she just directed. So,
wow. So,
and she sort of did that by feel because she couldn't see. She couldn't see if somebody blinked or whatever.
Right.
So that's sort of how I learnt, and I soon discovered that, you know, photography is not necessarily about what you see, it's what you feel and the energy that you give out, and yeah, especially with people, it's a, you know, it's a true exchange, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Have you ever had your own apprentice?
No, I haven't really. I'm a bit of a lone shooter like that, and I've trained a few people on the side and helped out, but I've never really gone down that track as far as having somebody assist me. I tend to be all over the place when I was doing weddings, and I've just sort of kept to myself as a portrait photographer.
Yeah. Now, okay, so you said you did weddings for a long time. What made you decide to swap over into the portrait world?
Well, I think, you know, weddings were something that were easy to find. You know, everybody's yeah. looking for a wedding photographer. I found that to be a great grounding, you know, where you turn up at a wedding and you have to just keep thinking on your feet. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to be a documentary photographer. You have to be an organizer. You know, weddings are such a big theatre. So you're sort of like the conductor and everything, can't you? So, but it's also as you get a bit older, you sort of think, oh well, you know, I don't want to be doing that every Saturday in the summertime, for long periods. So, and you know, I found just a natural progression to sort of move over more into portraits, where you're spending an hour and a half with a client on a shoot, and selling. And I also found that it was an easier way to make money. And if you know how to market, you can get the clients. So you're not sort of sharing clients with other people like you do with weddings, where you know they might go and interview two or three photographers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, portraits, you create your own market, and yeah, I found that quite liberating.
Yeah. Give us a picture of the last, when you started portraits anyway, of what your business looks like. Like, do you have a studio? Is it all outdoors? Do you, you know, what, like, who is your market? Like, kind of just give us an overview.
Sure. Where I live at the moment, it's a province with about 120,000 people. So it's not huge, but it's also, you know, quite rich farming country. So, and also we've had, you know, offshore oil produced here. So we've had quite a good microclimate over the last 20 years of having some, you know, reasonably well-off people in the area. My business has always been based around having a studio and a selling space. So I don't sell digital files now, and I've never gone down the road of doing packages or doing anything cheap, really, to be honest. I've sort of always had a belief that I wanted to deal with the top end of the market, the top, you know, 20% of people. And I've always marketed to that. So, you know, I've got a studio space now that I own and, you know, standalone business close to the central business district in New Plymouth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've gone from renting studios to owning my own, really. So I have worked from home as well, and I didn't really like that very much. So, yeah, I prefer to have a business space that when people walk in here, you look like the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they can look around and see my personal projects, and they can look around and see my client work.
Yeah, that's cool. I can hear people out there who are listening like, what do you mean he doesn't give digitals? How does he not give digitals? So like, walk us through that process. Like, well, one, did you ever give digitals? And two, you know, well, start there. Did you ever give digitals?
So no, I've never really gone down that track. I mean, if I get inquiries, and to be honest, my business is all about being the marketing, really. So I don't have a lot of people getting hold of me asking me what my packages are. So I've never sold digital files as such. I sort of base my business on people having a legacy product, something that's going to be on their wall forever. Okay. And yeah, I've sort of just held that belief. In saying that, if I have a client that, you know, spends, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 or whatever, I'll give them social media files, but I don't let them just have the digital files that they can go and print themselves.
Yep. So all the print, the wall art, everything is through you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So I'm really I like to think of, you know, I'm selling a product, you know, a high end product, and I have total control over how that looks and how it's, you know, presented out there in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. So when they come back into your studio after the shoot is done, is that something you do immediately after the shoot? Or are you taking some time to do any editing and printing things, or how does that look?
What I do with that, I don't like to do it quickly, because to me that looks like it's just a bit mm-hmm. too easy and you're not taking
Agreed.
Care. Normally what I would do is when I do the, you know, most of my portraits are taken outside, although I do have studio facilities. I prefer the out in nature or somewhere special to them. But when I do the actual photography session, I will generally book them for the next week, really. And if I can, try to book them at that stage. So, you know, it's easy. It's sort of an easy way of doing it while they're in front of you. And yes, so then they come back to my studio, and I might have taken 300 or 400 images, and I might narrow it down to, you know, 40 or 50 or just whatever. And then they sit down in my studio and they have a projected viewing through a data projector.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So let's go back to talk about marketing, because you mentioned that you get most of your clients through marketing. What type of marketing works best?
I like to do a mixture of things, you know, through social media channels, but I also like going to country fairs, trade shows that are pointed towards, you know, women. I do quite a bit of makeover work as well as family mm-hmm. portraits. So I just truly like to sort of mix up all those things. And now with my new business with my partner, we'll be doing some, you know, quite different marketing through that. That sort of gets us around New Zealand as well. So
I can hear people kind of saying like, oh, everyone that just, you know, they call me and they want like the digitals or the package or whatever. So are you using specific language within your marketing that is kind of pushing people towards the legacy wall art and that sort of thing?
I do. With anything I put out there, it really spells out that, you know, that this is what your investment will start from, sort of thing. But I also have my business model hasn't really changed a lot, and whereas you're still having people coming into your studio through a voucher system or, you know, something that you're giving them as a prize or you know, some big carrot that you're dangling mm-hmm. in front of them to make them come in. I know that's not everybody's cup of tea. I find if I can get people in my studio, generally I can sell to them.
Yeah. You said you do some sort of system, right, to get them in, like dangling.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure I heard that right. Yep. Okay, cool.
Sure.
Yeah. I find that to be very effective too. That's how I got off the ground with my business, is I gave gift vouchers, and then I kept giving them and kept giving them. And I was like, wait a minute, maybe I don't need to give them anymore as much. I was like, okay, wait a minute. I started to feel more confident and that sort of thing. But I mean, like, have you found one specific thing that works the best to get people in?
Sometimes I think it's people, they might see you, they might know who you are. So making sure that people understand that, you know, that you're really good at what you do and they're going to get something special. They also know that they're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And then quite often, because I've been around for a while, they've also seen my work in their friends' homes or somewhere else, or they've been to an exhibition. So I think it's sort of more about exciting them and wanting them to have a piece of you in a way.
And yeah, so much of what you're saying is so important. It's like, I think sometimes people think they can just kind of sit behind the computer and hope people are going to come. But it sounds like you have really done a great job of getting your name out there and just, I mean, networking, I guess, for a lack of a better word, just really putting yourself out there and being part of the community and everything.
Yes, I think it really comes down to having the right attitude from the start. And, you know, clients can smell fear. If you can't say your prices to them when they're standing in front of you with confidence, they'll think you're a fraud. So it's really, you know, I think the biggest thing with people coming into the industry is they don't believe in themselves or don't think what they're doing is something of value. I mean,
yeah.
You know, portraits are such a valuable thing to clients, you know, so it's really about valuing what you do, believing in it, and being able to really put that across to people.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I was kind of wondering that when you said, if I get them in, I know I can sell to them. And I feel like that comes with confidence. Like, you have to have that confidence and just value what you do and love what you do in order to sell.
That's right. And yeah. I mean, not everybody that comes into my studio spends, you know, sometimes you do end up giving something away, but it's really not getting hung up about that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, that can be just something, the stage of life those people are at.
Sure.
So I sort of think it's really just looking and saying, well, you know, maybe 2 out of 20 don't spend or whatever, and just really looking at the numbers and thinking, well, that, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, law of averages for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Just like not everyone's going to book, not everyone's going to spend.
That's right.
It just happens sometimes. Do you have like a, I don't know, like a specific sales system that you use, or, you know, something you do the same of every time, or do you just kind of mix it up depending on who's in front of you and, you know, as you get to know them?
What I've done probably forever is along one wall in my studio, my viewing area, I have portraits along the wall in different sizes. And really when I'm doing the sales, I just start, you know, with the largest portrait and work my way down and say, this is this much. Just go through the list, and then I watch them. I just say the prices, and then I sit back a little bit. And generally the next person who talks is the person who's buying the images. So it's just one of those things where I'm quite low key in my the way I operate, and so I'm not pushy. I'm not a pushy salesperson, but you know, there's sort of quiet ways you can sort of push them in the right direction. You know, how you size the images on the wall, or how, you know, what you want them to buy, and sometimes it might be a series of images, or but just about being passionate about certain images that they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of find that I find myself more and more explaining to them, you know, why I like a certain image. And, you know, a lot of that's probably come down to what I've learned as a judge. If you can explain to them why what they're looking at is so good, then, you know, they'll buy into it.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, you have to be telling the truth. If it's not the truth.
Yes, good point.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It has to feel, they're going to smell you, smell the ingenuine, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not being genuine, they're going to know. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so this is interesting. I'm trying to imagine it. It's like, you know, if you take the packages out of it, you take the digitals out of it, you just have these like gorgeous, I hate to use the word samples, but samples like hanging in your studio all in, and then you're just saying, okay, which one do you want your photos to be on? I mean, it's just all these physical, tangible things they can touch and take home. Yeah.
That's right. It's I think a lot of photographers nowadays, they don't think like a retail shop. And I think,
yes,
I think it's like anything. A lot of photographers can think they're competitive with other photographers. Whereas to me, you're not. I think you're competing with getting the money out of them before they go and buy a new couch or whatever. You have to think like a retailer and show your products. And you know, if you can show the products, they are of value to them. They'll buy them.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, people buy what they see, don't they? So
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. God, that's so important what you just said. And I'm the first to admit that I don't sell a whole lot of wall art. I haven't, but I know I'm leaving so much money on the table, But for people who, you know, to sell that artwork, exactly what you just said, think of yourself as a retail store. I love that.
Yeah. And if you want to people to buy big pictures, have big pictures in studio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't show anything smaller than a 20 by 14 inch, I suppose you could say. So if they want to see smaller, I'll go and drag something out. But I don't want them to buy those, so don't show them, really.
Yeah. Do you do any sort of like albums or, you know, coffee table books or anything like that? Or is it mostly just on the wall?
No, definitely. I do folio boxes and legacy albums. You know, sometimes, you know, people don't have the wall space, and that's, you know, something you hear quite commonly when people don't want to spend money. Oh, I don't have much wall space. Well, so, you know, you have to have products that might fit into a smaller area. Like, you know, you might have a triptych framed that's horizontal and vertical. So if it does, you know, you can fit a triple framed image that's vertical into lots of gaps in the house, whereas horizontally it can be a lot harder. So, but selling folio boxes and making sure you've got enough images to be able to, you know, sell a box of 10 or 15 or 20, as you know, as well as legacy albums and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Are there specific product companies that you use?
I sort of changed a little bit. I have used a lot of New Zealand based ones, but just with Graphy and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so
very cool. I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to hear more about your documentary work. And okay, at first my first instinct is like, oh, you just have to capture the moment, you know, candidly. But I feel like there's more to it. You know, like, is it that simple that you just have to look for it and capture the moment?
Documentary is such a can be a big range of types of images. Photojournalism is more about capturing something that is just happening in front of you. With documenting, you know, documentary, it can be photographing somebody in their natural environment. You know, so it could be really candid mm-hmm. in that environment, or it could be something a bit more directed to a certain degree. And, you know, some of the most famous documentary photographers in the world, you know, definitely directed people into positions where they photograph them. So,
okay. So it's not, okay. So there is a big difference there between the photojournalism and documentary. So it doesn't have to be just untouched moment. It just has to be in the natural environment.
That's how I treat
okay,
it.
Okay. Gotcha. And
I suppose the beauty with photography is there's no rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are, but we can break them. I break them all the time.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if someone really wants to sort of steer their work more towards the documentary style, like, you know, what's your best advice for people in order to, you know, make it look really cool?
I think there's sort of two aspects to it for me. There's my documentary personal work, which can be quite project-based, and I had an exhibition of a small town of people in New Zealand here in a place called Ohura, and, you know, that's taken me around the world. I've talked about it at Portrait Masters. I've had two exhibitions in China of it. It's, you know, it's been through media channels where it's had over 20 million views. So sometimes it might just be following your passion for something and seeing where it leads. And I think it comes from a curiosity with that type of work and just what you like to do. Like when I'm not doing client work, I'm still out there with a camera shooting personal work. And it's just sort of more flowed into a documentary sense. But I think the, you know, as far as client work goes, for me, it's even with our new business, we're sort of starting to really sort of find a niche for doing more series work and photographing people in their own homes and just getting natural reactions out of people, or just trying to find more of a natural sort of type of image that is contemporary. So, but you know, a lot of that sort of work can come about from doing your own personal projects, mm-hmm. and finding your own niche and what you like doing, and then putting that over, you know, carrying that on into your business side of things as well.
I'm looking through the project that you have listed on your website. I'm sorry, I'm going to say the name wrong. Ohura, did I say that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
These are so interesting to me. Like, there's the one with the bear skin on the wall. Is that a bear? A guy?
It's actually a deer.
Oh, deer skin. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess that wouldn't be a bear.
Not in New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, and now that I'm looking at it, it's not even the color of a bear. So, but the composition that you have here is just so cool. Just the way you laid it out, you know, with the hole in the wall, and it's like telling a story. There's a hole in the wall on one side. You know, just the look on his face, and then you have the deer skin. It's just everything about it. And as I'm flipping through, there's another one here of the guy in the kind of, you know, lazy boy chair. I don't know if you call them lazy boys over there, but
yes, we do.
Yeah, okay. Richard Wood and I are always on Voxer. Do you know what Voxer is? It's like a walkie-talkie where you talk back and forth because we do award stuff together and, you know, brainstorm, whatever. Anyways, sometimes he'll say something. I'm like, what does that mean? And or I'll say something and he'll be like, oh, I haven't heard that one before. Anyway, so I always just like to clarify. Okay, so he's sitting in this kind of recliner-looking chair with his dog, and there's just so much happening around him that is so, I don't know, it just tells such a story. And then the family here, the one of where there's like their laundry hanging.
Sure.
With the, like, there's just so much you can see in each of these.
Yes, I think with Ohura, I hit on a small town that, and what I'm doing there is giving people a glimpse into people's lives that they mm-hmm. wouldn't normally get to see, or even think that there are people like that live in New Zealand, really. So, and I think for me, that's what I like. It's sort of, it's almost like you're hunting with the camera,
yeah,
and just finding things. So those images of Ohura, they were more like portrait images in a way, but still showing their environment. So that's how I treated it. It was at a stage where I was looking for something different as far as photography was going for personal work. I'd been doing a lot of digital composite work and things like that, and I'd actually just had enough of it, to be honest, and was just starting mm-hmm. to starting to really get pulled away from doing personal projects or that type of imagery. And so Ohura came along and I just decided I'm going to shoot it like I used to shoot in film days, and that's not go out and just keep taking, you know, 300 or 400 shots, you know, like you can do with digital because it's free. Mm-hmm. So I just decided to be very precise with what I was doing and just shoot, you know, compose something and shoot it and sort of move on. So just tried to discipline myself to thinking in those old school methods.
Well, and I can see composition is really important to you. I'm guessing this just by looking at your work. It seems like composition is really important because it's like things that you have included that maybe some people would have not included. Like, it tells more of the story. Like this one where the woman, it's funny because I was giving critique in my Facebook group and someone had cut the woman off right at the waist. So she looked very cut off and it just didn't look right compositionally. But now I'm looking at this woman here. She has like the knit beanie on and the flannel and she's cut at the waist, but it makes so much sense the way you did that because you included also the clothes hanging. Like it just works in that way. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just seems like the composition is something that makes a lot of these images really cool too.
Yes, I think it's the old saying, really. It's putting order in the chaos of something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I sort of find myself organizing things, and I actually quite like the structure of those images, where you can, your eye can just roam around and look at every little detail.
That's what I've been doing.
Life.
I'm like, wow. And it just tells such a story about each of these people. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So that's something is just keeping, but by instinct, I just keep everything reasonably sharp in them. So your eye could roam around and look at the detail. You can actually stare at somebody's life and they're not staring back at you. But, you know, also with a project like that, I sort of found that with personal projects, you can actually start to find yourself in images and start to understand who you are yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's sort of almost like that, you know, through the camera you can start bearing your own soul or start figuring things out about your own life, or, you know, because we all photograph things and maybe we don't understand why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's something that I'm sort of just slowly digging into myself now, and just sort of finding out why, you know, I'm drawn to certain things.
Yeah, I think, you know, for people listening who might want to get into more documentary style, I wonder if it's just so important to take the surroundings, you know, just into play more. You know, just really look at what could be and should be included into the portrait, like this one that you have. And I feel bad that if people are listening, don't do it while you're driving, but make sure you go to Tony's website. It's tonycarter.co.nz, and then you can click on projects and you'll see it. But in this one where this guy has this like goofy grin on his face, and you included the ceiling. And I feel like the ceiling is very telling. Like, there's something about the ceiling that I really love seeing in this. And then behind his goofy smile, there's like some like, it looks like Michael Myers or some like horror film guy, like right above his head. And it's just such a funny contradiction between his like goofy smile, you know? I don't know. It's just cool. It's really cool to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think yes, sort of look at somebody's property and you can find out, you know, find features that for some reason you find interesting. It might be a, like you say, a dirty ceiling that's never been, you know, washed for a long time. But in saying that, I think you just got to make sure that you're being respectful to the people
mm-hmm.
as well.
It's a bit of a
tricky one. And, you know, with documentary projects like that, it's, you know, like for O'Hara, I mean, I still go there now and I'm looking at doing a book of it. That's my next goal with that. But it's just, you're really gaining respect and just keep going back and digging deeper, and just digging deeper and, you know, making sure that you learn new things along the way that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think you just, with photography and just life in general, you just have to keep, you know, growing and studying things, reading about it. You know, I started collecting photography from other photographers.
Yeah.
So it's just being immersed in something that you find interesting. And I think, you know, for me, that's what my portrait business has given me, the freedom to roam. It's given me financial freedom to be able to roam and do whatever I want, really. And that's surely the key, or if it is for me, of what life's all about, you know.
Yeah, same. That's something I've always said, is that it's the one thing I'm most grateful for being an entrepreneur is the freedom. The freedom to just design my life and my time and spend it with my kids and just travel and do all the things, you know, where I didn't have that before when I had that, you know, a job.
Sure.
Yeah, it's very important. Yeah. Okay, I want to ask you something that's not quite as exciting, but I know some people are going to want to know, which is about your gear and you know, what you shoot with. And like you said, especially with some of this documentary stuff where most things are in focus, like, you know, aperture-wise, are you shooting like f/14, f/10? Like, you know, how are you shooting, I guess?
Okay, I think the best comment I've had for somebody asking a photographer what they shoot on, and they said they just shot on a black camera. And I thought that was quite, funny.
I am not a gear techie person. Like, I have some old crap lenses that, okay, they're not crap to me. Like, other people might be, you know, put their nose up at it. But to me, I love, you know. But I know people are going to wonder. They like to know.
Definitely, yes.
What people shoot with.
So I'm a Nikon shooter, and I have been for a long time. And why that is it's just because I understand how they work. I don't necessarily like learning new things all the time like that. So to me, if you can pick it up and it's intuitive to use,
mm-hmm.
that's great. And it, you know, if the gear gets out of your way and lets you take the images, all the better. But so with as far as camera gear goes for a typical shoot for myself, I am very simple with my gear. I don't have any prime lenses that I use a lot. I do have an 85 1.4, but, you know, to me, you know, a 24 to 70 2.8 lens to me is the lens that I use mainly for documentary. So that goes out wide, but not too wide that it distorts things. And I just find it's my go-to lens. And it's like I went to India in 2017, I think it was. And I took, you know, I thought about it for a long time, but in the end, I took one camera body and one lens, and that was the 24 to 70. So I like to travel light and
more likely to use it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, but you know, with my business side of things, I quite often use, you know, I use a 70 to 200, 2.8 lens as well for a lot of it, for your more traditional type portraits. But yeah, like I say, I'm not real big on gear. I have, you know, DSLRs, that's what I use, but I've also got a couple of mirrorless with the new Nikon Z9, which is quite a beautiful camera. So it's so maybe just slowly changing over into that system, but you know, I don't really worry about that too much, as long as what you're using gives you the results.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always best to spend money on educating yourself, learning new things yourself, than upgrading your gear all the time.
Yeah. When you're doing your documentary, one last technical question. When you're doing your documentary work, okay, I know all things are important, but are you looking mostly at aperture, like in order to get the look that you want? Or let's say you need more light. Are you cranking up your ISO? Are you bringing down the shutter speed? Or, you know, like what's your kind of go-to for settings?
Okay. I treat everything quite differently like that. But, you know, the beauty of, like a lot of my earlier work was done on a tripod, even with documentary work, because I've not been able to shoot at high ISOs because of the grain. But now, you know, the grain is so phenomenal and with modern cameras, you know, that it takes quite a bit to make a grainy image these days. So I hand hold a lot more and I'm, you know, quite comfortable in, you know, pumping up the ISO. I'm a manual exposure shooter, so basically I don't use any auto features on my camera, not even auto ISO. I like to maintain control over everything. So, but, you know, I'm not saying anything against anybody that does it with their own system, just whatever works. But I probably shoot a lot at like f5.6 or f8. With documentary work, I don't shoot wide open too often because I probably like to think that when I'm looking at an image, it's more how an eye sees it rather than looking like it's been taken by a machine, you know, by a camera. And if you're blowing the background real out of focus, it's taking away the storytelling part of the image.
Yeah.
Not always, but that's how I feel about it for my own work.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I love it. I love it. I think that's a really good like golden nugget there for someone who, you know, wants to shoot documentary style. Like, yeah, make it look like it came not from a machine. I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this is great. I appreciate you talking, you know, just about everything with me. I do have a couple more questions, though, before we end that I always ask at the end of each episode, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And the first one is, what is something you can't live without when you're doing a photo shoot?
Oh, that is a good question. I suppose really it's good light. I struggle to photograph, you know, people in midday sun and things like that. So to me, I will work around when the light's at its best. So if the light's, you know, I really like early morning light or last light at night. So I know you can shoot anywhere at any time of the day, but I just think having the right light and is something that I struggle with if I have to do a job and I know it's not at the best time of the day.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. All right, cool. Second question is, how do you spend your time when you're not working?
I'm sort of totally immersed in photography. So I use it as, to me, it's a way of life. I am a photographer. That's what I do. You know, even with clients, I would sometimes say, I was doing this before I got paid to do it. So we, you know, I'm always wandering around, driving around in my car or on my motorbike, just looking at places and finding ins to meeting people. So, but if I'm not doing that, I like riding my mountain bike, and I rode a motorcycle as well. So, yeah, so those are my things that I do in my downtime.
Nice, nice. All right, number three is, what is your favorite inspirational quote?
I guess, yeah, I'm not really that big on quotes.
I'm not either. I'm with you.
But probably a big way of thinking about what I do is just leaning into your curiosity. I think that's just being curious and just leaning into it and just always just following what you do, really, and just digging deeper into something rather than having a shallow look, just dig deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not really a quote, but that's just something that
No, it's very wise and important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, love it. All right, number four is, what would you tell people who are just starting out in this business?
I would tell them to educate yourself in every way, to study body language and to enter competitions and just keep learning in whatever way you can get. Read books. Don't spread yourself too thinly as mm-hmm. far as what you're doing business-wise. Find out actually what you like doing and then really find a niche and just go hard at that rather than trying to be a general purpose photographer. Just find out what you're good at and then really work hard to be the best at that.
Yeah, love that. Awesome. And then where can people find you online if they're looking for you?
So probably the best place at the moment, because I'm just building a new website, which is a big improvement.
Lots over
what I've got. Yes, it's a lot of fun. But probably Tony Carter 67 at Instagram is probably the best place to find my current work.
Very cool. Sweet. Well, thank you again. This was awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Portrait System podcast. Your 5-star reviews really help us to continue what we do. So if you like listening, would you mind giving us a review wherever you listen? I also encourage you to head over to SueBriceEducation.com, where you can find all of the education you need to be a successful photographer. There are over 1,000 on-demand educational videos on things like posing, lighting, styling, retouching, shooting, marketing, sales, business, and self-value. There's also the 90-Day Startup Challenge, plus so many downloads showing hundreds of different poses. We have to-do checklists for your business, lighting PDFs, I mean, truly everything to help make you a better photographer and to make you more money. Once again, that's SueBriceEducation.com.